The Brad Sesmatt Show, broadcasting live from the ShopTates.com studios.
And welcome in. It's a beautiful Tuesday, October 8, 2013. Filling in for Brad Sesmatt today, none other than Espo. Greg Esposito, you can follow him on Twitter at Espo. My name is Jared Cohen of prosdepreps.com. And Espo, thanks for joining us today. Should be a good time.
Happy to be here. I'm really glad to understand that Brad's nickname, the big guy, holds true. It takes two of us to fill in for him.
So. Yeah, the shoulders aren't that broad, but the length and height is a lot, and basically two of us are needed to fill his shoes.
I love Brad, but there is twice the hair in the room right now than usual.
So. And more so on your end than mine, because mine's going more so towards him. Thanks for joining us. It's the Brad Sesmatt Show. As mentioned, I'm Jared Cohen. That's Greg Esposito. We're filling in for the big guy today. Lots of great stuff to get to, both locally and nationally. That is very newsworthy. Along the Diamondbacks end, MLB playoffs. We had some Suns action last night, so let's get right into it. As today's top stories in this hour are brought to you by the Honda Resort and Casino. The Honda Resort and Casino, what's going on in the world of sports? Just 3 miles south of Pine Top in the beautiful White Mountains. So the first thing we're going to get to, we'll go national instead of local first. The LA Dodgers, you know, sorry to turn the attention away from something positive to begin this show, but those listening, the LA Dodgers are moving on to the NLCS as they beat the Braves in a best of five series, 3-1. And it sounded a little bit something like this the last few games because of the name of Juan Uribe.
And the 2-2 pitch, Uribe hits a high fly ball into deep left field, way down the line and gone. And the Dodgers lead 4-3 on a two-run home run by Juan Uribe.
So does a part of you when you hear Dodger Stadium screaming like that just get a little annoying because you know the stadium doesn't sound like that for 162 games?
No, because when you hear Vin Scully, he could do anything.
That's true.
And I'd like it.
That's true.
That's the toughest part about the Dodgers is I don't like the team. I love the broadcaster. So when I hear the highlights,
he's my favorite. Yeah.
He kind of woos me into enjoying the highlight, even though I don't like the result that comes of it.
There is no better casting in a movie than putting Vin Scully as basically the play-by-play narrator of the Kevin Costner movie For the Love of the Game.
Not true. Major League, Harry Doyle.
No, but listen, okay, that's a good call. Just a bit outside. But no, seriously, like, what makes Vin Scully so great is how he tells a story every night. He knows when Kirk Gibson was in elementary school and what he did against the Bayfield Bears or whatever when he was in second grade. He knows his complete stat line.
Well, he's only been doing it for, the last 60 years?
Yeah, but he knows everything about everyone. He tells a story, and that was his job in that movie. It was great. It made the movie for me.
Sorry, I derailed us already, but yes, it hurts me when I hear Dodgers fans enjoying themselves when I know they usually don't.
Well, to get back to Vin Scully, he had a nice call to the end of the game and referenced something that does relate to Arizona at the end of the game.
Jansen out of a stretch, big guy ready, and the 2-2 pitch is swung on and missed. The Dodgers have won the National League Division Series, and the Braves have done what they've done all year long, strike out. 5 strikeouts in the last 2 innings, the side strikes out in the 9th, and the Dodgers are being mobbed on the infield. To my knowledge, there is no swimming pool handy tonight.
Love it.
Vin not only gets in his shot at Justin Upton and the Atlanta Braves, but then digs the Diamondbacks fans at the same time. It's fun. And I'm pretty sure they could have found a pool somewhere in Atlanta to celebrate in.
It was in L.A., though.
Or in L.A.
They have a giant ocean.
Wherever.
Everyone, we're moving down west. We're going to the beach. So there you have it. Long story short, the Dodgers are moving on to the NLCS. They will play the winner of a deciding Game 5 between the Pirates and the Cardinals. I believe that game's coming up tonight, so make sure you tune into that. Let's get into just some post-game reaction real quickly with the Dodgers. Don Mattingly, who pitched Clayton Kershaw on 3 days rest, on short rest, to pitch this final game for them, he talked about how it feels to get the series wrapped up.
I think getting in is the first thing. Then you talk about 11. and you know, we're down now. We got to start talking about eight. So, you know, we've moved one step closer. We don't have to get back on a plane tomorrow. It's a good feeling
to feel to think that this was a guy that was almost fired at the beginning of the season.
Yeah, he dead man walking a few months ago, and now he's being celebrated in L.A.
It's Greg Esposito. I'm Jared Cohen. We're filling in for Brad Sesmat today on the show. Some other things to get to. The Phoenix Suns were in action last night. Their first preseason game of the year going up against Maccabi Haifa, which was the champions of the Israeli Professional League. And the Suns, you know, I mean, they did what they were supposed to do against a team like that, put up 130 points. They had, I think, 15 or 16 steals. So they played pretty well defensively. There were some stretches where Maccabi hit some threes and went on some short 8-0 runs, but it was the first chance Espo to see the backcourt of Eric Bledsoe and Goran Dragic, and so far, case one was, you know, pretty promising.
Yeah, if you put this team in the Israeli league, we're talking about the 97 Bulls kind of team in the Israeli league. Unfortunately, NBA, but yeah, Goran Dragic and Eric Bledsoe looked amazing in the backcourt. One thing that I noticed in there is the anticipation anytime Eric Bledsoe is moving without the ball and Goran Dragic has the ball in his hands. Reminds me of Patrick Peterson when he's back for a punt. You're excited. You don't know what's going to happen. That's good for the Suns.
Yeah, no, absolutely. I mean, I think that people need to, you know, the Suns are going through some rebuilding. It's going to be some highs and lows this season, to say the least. But one huge positive still in my eyes is the fact that they landed Eric Bledsoe. He was one of the biggest name entities in the NBA, and the Suns were the ones that were able to get him. And he is going to be a lot of fun to watch, whether it's this season or seasons down the line. This is a guy that's a game changer for this team moving forward.
Ryan McDonough, the general manager, is basically Monty Hall of the NBA right now. Solid. He'll pick up the phone, and any general manager he gets on the line, he'll say, "Let's make a deal." He and his entire staff, assistant general manager Trevor Buckstein, that whole front office really put together a nice deal to get Eric Bledsoe.
So the Suns were in action. Bledsoe led the team in scoring with 22 points. Dragic added 16. Actually, the combo got off to a quick start, had, I think, 15 of the team's first 32 points in the first quarter, so about half of their points. Probably something we'll see a lot of. It was also our first chance to see first, let's get into some reaction. Jeff Hornacek, after the game last night, talked about the effort from the team in this first preseason game.
I thought our guys set the tone in the beginning. Goran and Eric and those guys in that starting lineup gave us some opportunities to get some easy buckets. Then, you know, once we got up, then it was kind of that natural tendency to have that fall asleep on defense attitude. And I think they scored 6 or 8 straight points on us. So
there you have it. And as mentioned, they did go on an 8-0 run at one point. I think that was the most that they did. But as I was about to get to before we got to that sound, it was the first chance to see the new guys. The Alex Len. Well, there's a lot of new guys. The rookies. There's a lot of new guys. But yeah, no, to see Alex Len, who doesn't look like the feet are bothering him. He looks like he's moving pretty well. I also saw Archie Goodwin. Both Alex Len admitted nerves. Archie Goodwin maybe didn't admit nerves, but showed it at the beginning. But both ended up showing some pretty good things last night.
These are really young players. You got to expect a little nerves, a little cautiousness when they get on the court. I think that was Archie's problem. He was cautious when he first got out there. Wasn't the guy we saw attacking the basket at Summer League. But once he got into the fourth quarter, Archie's confidence came back. He had 11 of his 13 points in the fourth quarter. You saw the explosiveness that this kid brings to the table. When he gets it together, he adds a little more bulk. This is a very special player that the Suns got at number 29. Alex Len, 6 months away from the court because of those surgeries on his feet. It's going to take a little while for him to round into shape, but he showed that he knows how to rebound, showed off his jumper a little bit. I think they're going to be all right.
He showed off some passing, too.
Yes.
That's something that you don't hear about Len, is he had some nice-looking passes. He had one play. I was at the game with you last night. He had one play where he was high post, had a beautiful kind of, I don't want to say no look because he was looking in that direction, but it was kind of a fancy dish down low to Krotzkov. Is that how you pronounce it?
It's close enough.
There's something like that. if you try to pronounce his name just by looking at it, that's not what it sounds like, but I think that's how you pronounce it. Nevertheless, the Suns win their first preseason game. They're in action again against who is it, the Blazers?
It's Portland tomorrow.
Portland tomorrow, and then they have the Clippers back at home next week. Really quick before we move on to Pedro Gomez, who's coming up in the next segment. The Diamondbacks, some news coming on. The Diamondbacks, we talked enough about the Dodgers in this segment. We got to talk about the Diamondbacks. Some coaching news to get to. News just came down as this show started. Steve Sachs, he was the first base coach for the Diamondbacks. He is no longer on the coaching staff. And also yesterday, Charles Nagy, the pitching coach, was fired.
It comes down to this. When you have a season that doesn't meet expectations, you have to have a fall guy. It's kind of like when you have when you're watching a mob movie or a political thriller, there's always the fall guy. Sachs and Nagy were Sonny Corleone at the toll booth in The Godfather. They were Ryan Gosling in Ides of March, although significantly less attractive. They're the guys that have to take the blame, because if you're not ready to get rid of Kurt Gibson, somebody else has to take the fall. It happens to be his coaching staff.
Basically, they need to get Gordon Bombay in the mix in this coaching staff so the Ducks can fly together, right?
Now we're dropping Mighty Duck references on people.
That's the first thing I thought of. I'm Jared Cohen. That's Greg Esposito. So we'll get into that with Pedro Gomez coming up next as the Diamondbacks make some coaching changes. But before we go for this segment, we talked about the Dodgers. I guess we'll talk about them a little bit more. You got to go check out our Facebook question of the day. Today's question on Pros to Preps: after the Dodgers advanced to the NLCS last night, it got us thinking here at Pros to Preps. Which LA team do you dislike the most? A, Dodgers. B, Lakers. C, USC. D, Kings. You can head over to Facebook.com/Pros to Preps. Like our page and share your input. That's Facebook.com/Pros to Preps. Do you have a leader in the clubhouse?
Well, ironically, E, the producer, forgot option E, all of the above. But I would probably say right now, because of Poolgate, the Dodgers are probably leading in the clubhouse.
Well, that's something that we'll toss around a little bit later on the show, so make sure you stay with us. But coming up next, we got some more baseball to talk about. ESPN's Pedro Gomez joins us next here on the Brad Sesmatch Show with Jared Cohen and Greg Esposito.
Get all the latest Arizona sports news from the high schools to the pros. Follow us on Twitter at Pros2Preps. It's time to talk Arizona Diamondbacks and Major League Baseball with ESPN insider Pedro Gomez. Here's Brad Sesmatch.
And the Dodgers are being mobbed on the infield. To my knowledge, there is no swimming pool handy tonight.
Just when you think the Dodgers winning and moving on to the NLCS wasn't bad enough for Diamondback fans, you got Poolgate resurfacing in the voice of Vin Scully. This is Jared Cohen. That's Greg Esposito. We're filling in for Brad Sesmat today, and right now we're happy to be joined by ESPN's Pedro Gomez. He joins us every week. And Pedro, did you hear that soundbite from Vin Scully after they won that last night?
Just now. That's the first time I hear that bite. No surprise. That's going to linger on for quite a while.
I'm sure it is. But the fact that it came out of Vin Scully's voice is something we talked about in the first segment that doesn't make it quite as bad as it really was.
Yeah, if it were Charlie Steiner, I think I might be a little more upset. But since it's Vin, we'll let it go.
So Charlie may have done the same thing, though, over on radio. Who knows?
There you go. As Pedro Gomez is joining us here on the Brad Sesmat Show with Jared Cohen and Greg Esposito. Pedro, let's get into the Diamondbacks. You know, we're in the thick of October, so we'll talk playoffs. But first, some news coming down from the Diamondbacks. First, yesterday, Charles Nagy is fired. And now coming up today, news that just came up just a few minutes ago, Steve Sachs, first base coach, was fired. Are you surprised by some of these coaching moves that have occurred with the Diamondbacks here of late?
The Sachs one, not particularly. I had heard some rumblings that one probably was going to happen. I heard that about, I don't know, 2-3 weeks ago. But Nagy may be a little more surprising, only because I didn't hear that one. But of course, you know, the pitching, starting pitching in particular, didn't quite excel at the level that the Diamondbacks wanted it to. So we all know how it is. You don't fire the staff, you fire the boss in baseball, and that's what they did there with Charles.
Some rumblings have been coming out that the Diamondbacks may be looking to add a power bat in this offseason. Is that a sign that the you know, the gritty way of playing that the team had kind of pushed last year, that's coming to an end? They're going to go with a more conventional look?
Well, I think when you look at the clubs that have reached the postseason, you know, it's not unusual. I mean, I'm in Detroit right now for the A's and Tigers. The Tigers are probably one of the least athletic teams in baseball, and yet they won 92 games. They're sitting here in the playoffs. They're not looking very good right now because Miguel Cabrera's injury is severely limiting him. But then you look at Oakland. You know, Brandon Moss is their cleanup hitter. He has struck out three times in each of the first three games, and yet he delivered the big blow yesterday. You know, a home run can erase a lot of mistakes. Josh Reddick had been off to a pretty bad start to this postseason, striking out almost as equally as Brandon Moss, but he delivered a home run yesterday. So you look around and clubs really are looking to add pop to their lineup. They do believe that that is maybe the way to score runs. And when you look around, there's not a lot of clubs that scrap together, you know, 2-1, 3-1 type wins. They rely on that old Earl Weaver philosophy of the three-run homer.
From your perspective, I mean, for the Diamondback standpoint, Robinson Cano, obviously, probably is not going to happen. But there's a guy like Nelson Cruz out there. Even though he's coming off the Biogenesis season where he missed 50 games, he still is a guy that has quite a bit of power. And I was actually having a pretty good season before he had to take on that suspension. Is that a guy that you think the Diamondbacks could look towards as being that power bat?
You know, despite the Biogenesis suspension, we saw it last year with someone like Melky Cruz, who was suspended, and yet the Blue Jays turned around and gave him 2 years at 16. Nelson Cruz hit 27 home runs and missed practically 2 months of the season. So, of course he's an option. Kevin Towers is going to look at all his options, and if they want to add a power bat, that name certainly is going to come up in their internal meetings. No question.
Going back to the Pedro, and Pedro Gomez is joining us with Jared Cohen and Greg Esposito here on the Brad Sesmat Show. Going back to Diamondbacks and talking about pitching, we hit on Charles Nagy, and you mentioned that was a little bit of a surprise. But one pitcher in particular, Patrick Corbin, had that great season, made the All-Star team, was basically the ace of the squad for almost the entire year, but really kind of stumbled into the finish line. Do you notice any concerns on that front with him going into next year? Did he pitch too many innings, or is it just a product of him just getting a little tired and they have nothing to worry about moving forward?
This is not unusual for young pitchers when they first make the leap from either college to the minors and then minors to the big league level, because, you know, in the minor leagues, the season ends the first week of September. In the big leagues, it ends the last week of September. So there's an additional 4 weeks of baseball, and those bodies are not accustomed the first time around when they make that jump. So there was nothing to give the Diamondbacks thought toward the end that there was something physically wrong with Corbin. If there had been, he would have been pulled from the rotation with 2 or 3 weeks to go in the season. There would have been no need at that point to continue to push him, because the Diamondbacks' chances for making the postseason were so remote at that point. So it's really a natural progression that happens to a lot of young pitchers, especially ones that aren't built like a Rick Sutcliffe, you know, that big, big body type guy, so, or a Curt Schilling, those type of guys. It's not really that unusual. I mean, it's a smaller framed body, and he's got to get used to pitching 6 months, not five.
Let's shift gears towards the playoffs now. Dodgers wrapped up their series last night. Can you remember a team that has turned on a dime more than the Dodgers and had their manager basically go from the hot seat to being celebrated the way Mattingly has there in L.A.?
You know what? I'm hard-pressed to think of it. I mean, last year Oakland did something similar where they were foundering, and they were almost dead the first week of June and did something very similar. But it's Oakland, so it's not going to grab the national attention the way that the Dodgers do. It does happen, but, boy, it's really, really infrequent. The other aspect that probably helped the Dodgers push it to a national story was the emergence of Yasiel Puig. I mean, he was a very dynamic, exciting type of player who did things somewhat unconventionally because he was so aggressive. And that certainly helped push the story forward. And with all the wins stacking up, it made it an easy national story.
Staying with the National League, I mean, on the other side, we have the Pirates and the Cardinals. Now, they're notched up at two right now. And Pedro, if you're the MLB, you look at this great story with the Pirates, and then you look at one of the storied franchises in the Cardinals with a chance to play the LA market. So if you're the MLB, what are you kind of leaning towards? What are you kind of hoping for, even though they want just good ratings and a good series and a winner? But if you're the MLB, what are you kind of hoping for?
You know what? With the Dodgers being one half of that equation, I don't think it matters. I really don't. The Dodgers are going to be able to pull in the television ratings pretty much on their own. And yes, the Cardinals do have, they are a storied franchise, but they're more of a regional franchise. Their followers are Missouri, Illinois, Iowa, you know, that area right there in the middle of the country, Arkansas. So it's not like they're going to suddenly bring in these fantastic numbers. The Dodgers will handle that part. Either story is going to be good. The storied franchise in St. Louis or the back from 20 straight losing seasons Pirates. So you're going to have a good storyline regardless. With, you know, the Cardinals do have more name recognition. People know who Matt Holliday is. They know who Adam Wainwright is. They know David Freese from the World Series a couple of years ago. They certainly carry Yadier Molina, another one. They certainly carry more cachet. But the Pirates are getting there. And, you know, never underestimate the power of the underdog going up against Goliath as a storyline. And that's what you'd have if the Pirates were to win and advance to play the Dodgers.
Yesterday, 12 hours of baseball. Can you remember a day in the postseason that had as much drama and intrigue and interest as yesterday packed into it?
Yeah, it was a great day. I mean, when you look at, you know, Lobaton hitting the walk-off home run for Tampa Bay against Boston on the verge of elimination, when you see Uribe hit the shot in the bottom of the eighth, there's no doubt that you know, Waka going into the eighth with a no-hitter. I mean, tremendous storylines, tremendous drama, all packed into one day. And that's exactly what baseball was hoping would start to happen, because the first couple of days of this postseason, boy, there were a lot of routes. And there was a lot of really the type of games where it's the seventh inning, you kind of know it's over, and channels are being flipped off the baseball game. And that's the last thing that baseball wanted. So that was the type of day that absolutely can prop up the entire postseason and make everybody stand at attention.
Yeah, I think any day that Major League Baseball can evoke a bunch of Muppets jokes is probably a successful one, too.
So this is Jared Cohen and Greg Esposito filling in for Brad Sesmat. We're visiting with Pedro Gomez. Now we'll just close things out, we'll focus on where you're at. Detroit, they're taking on Oakland. They trail 2-1. They have Doug Fister throwing. Is there kind of a sense of urgency, or is with Detroit? Well, obviously there's a sense of urgency to move on, but with Oakland as well, because with Oakland, if they lose this game, even though they're going back home, they have to take on Max Scherzer, who did pretty well against them in game one. Is there kind of a sense with Oakland of trying to close this off now, or do they obviously move on and just figure it out against Scherzer?
You know, Oakland's the type of franchise that their mentality is probably a little different than the traditional teams, because this is game four. They're starting their second rookie on the mound in four games, who has had zero postseason experience. We saw it with Sonny Gray in game two, and it worked out very well. Dan Straley, who, even though he was a late season call-up the year before, did not qualify as finishing his rookie season. So this technically was Dan Straley's rookie season. And it's hard to remember a club starting 2 of 4 who have had zero postseason experience. The A's go with the hot hand. It doesn't even matter that they're going to face Max Scherzer in a possible Game 5. They're not thinking along those lines. They are thinking, you know what? Straley was hot for us down the stretch. This is the guy we want on the hill. We're going to be just fine. And even though we strike out a lot, we find ways to win a game. And right now the A's just look like they are so superior to Detroit in practically every aspect of the game. They're far more athletic. They seem to be much more confident on the field, and it's showing up right now. You know, the Tigers, they've played 27 innings in this series. The Tigers have scored in two of those 27 innings.
Wow.
That's it. 25 scoreless innings otherwise. So right now, when you've watched these first three games of this series, it's hard to believe Detroit can beat them just because Oakland is playing so superior to the Tigers.
And it blows your mind thinking about it, but it's the same every year. You know, the big names on the Tigers, yet the A's are outplaying them. So, last question to get to here, Pedro, before we let you go. Of all the teams so far in the playoffs, who looks the best to you?
Well, the Dodgers' rotation absolutely does, but the fact that Greinke lost game two, you know, that throws a little bit of a curveball into the equation. Oakland plays the most free baseball, just mindless type, you know, hey, let's go have fun. But Boston right now, the way that they're scoring runs, absolutely looks like they're a team that probably can go all the way.
Pedro, thank you so much for taking time. As always, we appreciate it, and we'll talk to you next week.
Okay, guys.
It's Pedro Gomez on the Brad Sesmatch Show. He is every week. He's covering the MLB playoffs, more specifically in Detroit and Oakland, a potential deciding game there if Oakland can pull off the win and knock out Detroit, which would be surprising to me.
I feel bad for Pedro. He's got to go to Detroit and Oakland. Not exactly the picturesque road trip you want.
Not exactly. That's Greg Esposito. I'm Jared Cohen. We're filling in for Brad Sesmatch today. And we've got a whole lot more to get to with a lot of football-related topics that are, you know, they're interesting to toss around, to say the least. So we'll get into some of that coming up on the other side. Again, Jared Cohen and Greg Esposito filling in for Brad Sesmatch today on ProsToPreps.com.
Like our Facebook fan page for the latest news from the high schools to the pros. Facebook.com/ProsToPreps.
Jared Cohen and Greg Esposito filling in for Brad Sesmatch on the Brad Sesmatch Show. Here on this beautiful Tuesday, October 8th. It's already October, which is crazy. It's October baseball. Football is over a month in.
And it's still 90 degrees outside. Welcome to Arizona.
It is still 90 degrees outside. Yep, that's Greg Esposito. You know, this segment, we're going to get into some football news, some football topics that have kind of made their way around the country, if you will, that have... A lot of people have their opinions about it, and some of them are controversial. And the first one we're going to get into is something that's been very controversial for a few years now is, you know, HBO's Hard Knocks. From things that have come out of it, like Rex Ryan's vulgar talks and how many children Cromartie has. And
can he name all of them?
And can he name all of them? And that's just the Jets season. Hard Knocks has been controversial, but according to Ian Rappaport, who tweeted out yesterday that the NFL says there will never be another season without Hard Knocks, and that it should be something that the NFL teams should want to spotlight their teams with going forward.
I agree 100%.
So do I.
Controversy sells. Interest is what Hard Knocks brings. Why not guarantee that it's going to be around? I don't think it should be voluntary. If a team wants to do it, sure, let them do it. But the NFL should have the right to tell a team this is happening. You're going to be on Hard Knocks because it helps sell your brand and our brand. One team that I think it would benefit greatly, right in our own backyard. The Arizona Cardinals could benefit immensely by being on Hard Knocks. What it does is takes a team without a national fan base, gives it a national audience, and gets them interested in their storylines. You can't tell me next year, going into Bruce Arians' second year, that with a coach like him, who's very outgoing,
love him,
very great with the quotes, a guy like a Larry Fitzgerald on the team, whoever their draft pick is next year, there's intrigue. You could build interest. I think it would
Darnell
be great.
Dockett?
Dockett, yeah. You can't forget Dockett. Potentially Darryl Washington, whoever the quarterback is next year, because we know there'll be another one. Why not have Hard Knocks come out here and build your national fan base. There is nothing bad that can really happen. Maybe there's some embarrassing things that are seen, but fans find that endearing. That's why the Cincinnati Bengals are interesting to people after the two times they've been on Hard Knocks.
I agree with you 100%. I'm just going to play devil's advocate with you, though.
Bring
it, he says. Well, I'm going to bring it. It's going to be Broughton, okay? From an NFL player's standpoint, though, and coach's standpoint, you always have cameras in your face. The locker room is no longer your getaway. And when you bring in Hard Knocks, you have cameras in your coaches' meetings. You have cameras in on players and on coaches when players are getting cut. Like, I understand the drama and the intrigue, and I love it as a fan and as someone that covers professional sports. But at the same time, if you're a player, isn't there like a fine line that you can cross? And that's why teams are avoiding it, because this show crosses that line.
All right, I'm get close to the speakers. I'm going to share a little secret with you guys here. Nobody really knows this, but professional sports is a business, and it's entertainment.
Wow.
And whatever it does to get those dollars coming in the door, you do it.
But it's also...
It does
also
not matter if it affects your coaches or your players. You let it in.
You're setting the precedent, though, that you're not protecting your players.
Welcome,
you care more about that than your players.
Welcome to this generation. Everybody's got a camera in their pocket. Almost every athlete is tweeting and shooting video and sharing little pieces of their lives. Privacy's over, baby. Let's get it all out there. I want to see every little bit of professional sports, dirty and otherwise, out there for public consumption. Sports is a business. Sports is entertainment. Give me what I want. Cameras everywhere.
I agree with you. I was just playing devil's advocate,
but,
you know?
You didn't play it well enough. You got to bring it harder.
But at the same time, though, Espo, like, I agree with you. I agree with you 100%. And that is the name of the game and the generation and the times that we live in now. But at the same time, like, there's an element. Hockey would never have this. Hockey is not football for a reason, okay?
Done it, though, with the 24/7
series. Yeah, but not the way, like, Hard Knocks does it, okay? Like hockey, players have injuries. Players have a busted ankle, and it's called a lower body injury, okay?
Technically, that's true.
Technically, it's true, okay? They are so protective of their players, of their coaches, and it brings... hockey obviously isn't football, so I'm not going to say it's going to bring an extra element of drama or intrigue, because it's still not at that same level. But at the same time, at least the players know in this age that they're being protected on the ice while they're doing their craft.
How is it being protected if you say a lower body injury rather than
because
an ankle
in hockey
injury?
People target you, and same thing with football.
Are you really going to tell me that you think these athletes aren't smart enough to figure out where the guy's hurt if the team doesn't release it?
I don't know.
It's easy. You watch the guy's carrying an ankle differently than he usually would. You hit him there. You're not protecting a guy necessarily. You're just playing mind games with another team. I don't care about the mind games and the quote unquote protecting a guy. In the end, this is a business about selling these teams. If I'm the NHL, I do everything I can to make my sport popular, even if that means cameras in the locker room speeches during each game. I don't care. You have to figure out a way to market a team sometimes and a league. And if that requires breaking that fourth wall and letting everybody see everything, so be it.
It's Greg Esposito. I'm Jared Cohen. We're filling in for Brad Sesmat today. On the same token, I love Hard Knocks. I haven't had HBO for a couple years now, and I missed it this year, which was frustrating. All the stuff that I heard from Vontaze Burfict was funny to me. It was funny to me. Another football-related story to get into, okay? And I know you got a good rant for this one, too. Steve Spurrier takes a shot at Jadeveon Clowney. If you didn't read about it or didn't hear about it, we have the sound, and we're going to play it for you right now.
He told me he couldn't play, that his ribs hurt, couldn't run. And said, I can't play. I said, well, that's fine. You don't have to play. And we'll move on. He may not be able to play next week. I don't know. If he wants to play, we'll welcome him to come play for the team if he wants to. But if he doesn't want to play, he doesn't have to play. Simple as that.
And something that isn't in that soundbite, that a follow-up question that someone had for Spurrier was, do you know the commitment or dedication? What kind of commitment or dedication does Clowney have to this team? And his response was, you'll have to ask him. And the funny, ironic part to that is South Carolina has a similar ASU-type Vontaze Burfict rule where Clowney only talks to the media after games. He doesn't talk to them during the week. He doesn't talk to them during practices. So in another backhanded slap way, the media can't even talk to Clowney, and Spurrier says you'll have to ask him what his type of commitment is.
Why should he have commitment and dedication to this team? I'm just going to ask that because – basically, they held him hostage after what a year that would have put him in the top three.
Didn't hold him hostage.
No, they in the system did. He had no option to go into the NFL and make money because of a rule that prevented him from doing it, even though he would have been probably a top three pick. Now he comes back and he has to look at it and then protect himself from injury, from a poor play. Look at what happened to Matt Barkley in that case. A lot of people say, well, he could have taken the year off or he could have went and played in the Arena Football League. Those two options don't help him. He makes $400 and the potential injury, or he looks like he has no desire to play and he sits out for a year. Instead, he comes back and he's protecting himself. If his ribs hurt, he shouldn't have to play. If he feels like there's a potential for injury and there's nothing really worth his time, he shouldn't have to play. There is no reason these kids should have to stay if they are ready for the NFL. It's an archaic rule. You're preventing these guys from making their money. And really what Spurrier is saying is Jadeveon Clowney is sitting out and hurting my chance to get a bigger contract and keeping my job here at South Carolina. Because Clowney's not going to make money. The university will. Spurrier will from him playing. But he's not seeing any of that.
I don't agree with you from the Barkley standpoint. Barkley did not play well last year. Barkley was a product. He had the weapons around him. He had an okay offensive line, not a great one, but his play on the field was the problem. Not his commitment, not his his draft stock, not him nursing injuries. He played bad and got exposed. This is a case with Clowney where he's holding himself out because of injury. And at the same time, that is not going to look good in front of NFL executives.
Why not? They know what this guy can bring. They realize he's trying to protect his self-interest. Yes, they do. They saw it last year. And a lot of people are questioning
whether he had one big hit?
A lot of people are questioning whether he is actually injured right now, too, because of the way it came out.
So do you want that? You're going to dedicate how much money in a first-round pick to a guy that has his own self-interest over a team?
Everybody has their own. Honestly, nobody's going out there without their own self-interest at front of mind. You're not really sacrificing yourself for a team. I love that this is the glowing, thought that we've painted about sports, professional or college, that these guys are going out there solely for the team and the greater good and all. No, at the end of the day, they're going out there for themselves and playing as part of a team because they want to make money. They want to have the fame, the fortune. They want to feel part of something. It's about the individual as much as it is about the team in sports. We've just tried to create this glowing idea that it isn't about that.
Then why do players' draft stock fall because of character issues?
Character issues are different than taking one's personal interest ahead of it. Character issues are flaws off the field that could eventually cause trouble, legal problems, stuff like that.
Then why did Matt Barkley fall?
Because he wasn't good last year. That's why.
Well, Jadeveon Clowney hasn't been good this year, and he's seeing his stock falling.
Not according to what I've read.
He was the set first number one overall pick going into this year. Now there's a lot of question with that. It's probably not going to change, but he can control that. That's Greg Esposito. I'm Jared Cohen. We're filling in for Brad Sesmat today on the Brad Sesmat Show coming up next.
React and interact to today's Pros to Preps question of the day at facebook.com/pros to preps.
So we had a Facebook question for the day that I'm sure will get Arizona fans fired up, and we're going to get into that right here. I'm Jared Cohen. That's Greg Esposito. We're filling in for Brad Sesmat today on the Brad Sesmat Show, and the question, we'll jump right into it. After the Dodgers advanced to the NLCS last night, it got us thinking here at Pros to Preps. Which LA team do you dislike the most? A, Dodgers, B, Lakers, C, USC, D, Kings. Espo?
I think one team was definitely left off that list, and I blame Eric Sorensen for that. The UCLA Bruins were not on that list, and I think they should have been on that list, quite frankly.
Do people hate UCLA, though? I understand I'm talking to two U of A alums, and I know there's great hatred between the U of A basketball program and the UCLA basketball program, but they wear powder blue uniforms.
So does North
Carolina.
They're
UCLA. They're nice. They're just nice. They're just nice people.
It's jealousy. Have you seen their cheerleaders?
Have you seen USC's cheerleaders?
Yes, I'm jealous about them too.
Of course. UCLA's but you can go win. Up and down. You can go up and down the Pac-12. You're not going to find bad-looking cheerleaders unless you maybe why Washington State. But
here's the thing: we're asking Arizona fans, and there's Arizona basketball fans out there who would tell you that they dislike, because hate is a strong word.
But hate.
We can say hate. It's okay.
They hate UCLA more than they hate ASU. They hate Stanford
aren't very smart then. Because
I hate UCLA as a U of A basketball fan. I don't like UCLA basketball more than I don't like ASU basketball.
That's a problem, because ASU is the in-state rival, and you always have to dislike, hate, whatever you want to say, more than any other team in any other state.
But if you're a U of A basketball fan, they're not even on your wavelength.
Nope.
It doesn't matter, though. No, you still have to dislike them more.
You can dislike them. I'm just saying, if I could choose a bigger rivalry in the Pac-12 is U of A UCLA than U of A ASU.
No way.
In basketball, yes.
In football.
But as a whole.
No, I'm talking about in basketball. That's why UCLA.
Yeah, we're getting way sidetracked here. You're going off on this little UCLA tangent.
We're not talking rivalries. We're talking dislike, pure hate from an Arizona sports fact.
And I think people are quick to forget what happened between the Kings and the Coyotes a couple years ago in the playoffs. That's why the Kings made the list.
Yeah, I don't disagree that the Kings should be there, but most people don't think about hockey when they think of the hated sports here in the Valley. That's going to take time to build. I think the new ownership group will help with that. But I really think it comes down to, it's got to be the Lakers. The Lakers have ripped the Suns' hearts out in every way, shape, and form over the years.
I agree, but it could be a seasonal question too, Espo. Because in the basketball season, at the height of the playoffs, no question. But what the Dodgers did, clinching at Chase Field,
I'm a Diamondbacks fan, and I love that.
I didn't have a problem with it, but we're against public perception for the most part on that.
To the victor goes the spoils. You want to swim in the pool? Great. If the Diamondbacks don't like it, beat them, all right? Next year, put up a sign that says, we don't swim in your toilet, with a picture of Dodger Stadium.
Yikes.
So don't pee in our pool, and then go out and beat the Dodgers. That's the way you prevent them from celebrating on your field. I had no problem with that.
Having grown up here, like you both as well, I still, in the thick of October, will pick the Lakers. And it could be a seasonal thing, but I just think globally, because I think that's what the question does. Mm-hmm. And I would much rather see the Dodgers swimming in my pool than the Lakers swimming in my pool.
When I devised this question, the first image that popped into my head was Rajah Bell clotheslining Kobe Bryant.
And
the fact that my
picture.
Friend had that printed onto a t-shirt, and to this day, I still think that is one of the most amazing t-shirts I've ever seen. You know why? Because I am envious of what happens in Southern California. I am envious of their success, like most Phoenix fans are.
Yeah, they are the bigger brother holding us at arm's length as we take swings at them. That's just what it is, and we have an issue with it. We have an inferiority complex with LA, and understandably so. Bigger city, more championships, more success, and geographically, it is the closest to the Valley. LA has other LA teams, has other California teams, but for us, LA teams are the closest geographically we have, so thus, there are hated rivals.
And the problem that I have, though, is that you talk to Lakers fans, and they're like, well, the Suns aren't even on our radar.
Well,
like the Suns are, that's nice. Maybe that's a little bump in the road here and there, but I'm looking for the Celtics.
Well, what does the bigger brother say, though? He doesn't take the little brother seriously when he says, I'm going to come out to the playground and take you to the woodshed. No, he goes, I'm going to worry about the older guys that I'm competing against.
And maybe, and you know what? 100% on right there.
That's right.
No one likes being the little brother.
Nope.
No one likes being the Diamondbacks aren't the Dodgers' little brother.
No.
They haven't been. The Dodgers have been irrelevant. The Diamondbacks have had more success than the Dodgers have. They're not the little brother that, I mean, USC, I don't think anyone likes USC. So
no, they don't like
unless
it.
Unless you go there.
It comes down to the Lakers. I mean,
it is the Lakers.
The Lakers single-handedly have prevented the Suns and some of the better Suns teams from winning championships. They wound up getting Kareem Abdul-Jabbar, who to this day is probably the biggest mark on the Suns franchise history, not winning that coin flip and drafting him. And then he had success in a Lakers uniform. There's so many instances of this, and it goes back so far. Like most things in Arizona sports, it starts and stops with the Suns and the Lakers, the rivalry.
And deep down, and that's Greg Esposito. I'm Jared Cohen. We're filling in for Brad Sesmat today. It's also Eric Sorensen and Jared behind the glass. Deep down, though, and I've said this for years, I think there was a question recently of what team would you like to see win the championship on Pros to Preps. And Eric listed a few names, and I wrote that it's the Suns because deep down, the Suns are the prize gem of this town. Mm-hmm. The Diamondbacks have had success, and they're the only team with a championship. The Cardinals are a part of the NFL, which is king. But I think if there was one team that could win a title that anyone could choose, I think a majority would say the Suns.
Because we've had our heart broken so many times.
And there's more deep-rooted fandom of the Suns than any other team.
I think it's a closer argument than many would think. I think the Cardinals are in that list, too, because we've had to suffer through so many bad seasons that they may have only been here for 25 years. It feels like they've been here for 60. Because year after year, you get your hopes up. They fall short. When they were so close to winning that Super Bowl, you know, when Larry Fitzgerald runs that touchdown in, euphoria. When they make the Super Bowl, it was insane. I think they're close to the Suns winning. I think the Suns edge it out.
My argument with that, though, if we have time, is that it got to that point once the Cardinals made the Super Bowl. When the Suns are in the playoffs, when they were in the peak of the Nash era, people were coming out the woodwork to go to sports bars to watch round one against the Blazers.
That's true.
That bar was packed the day that Goran Dragic had that amazing second half against the Spurs. That was a first or second round game.
Hey, the Suns are my first love, so I agree with you 100%. I'm just saying, for Cardinals fans long-suffering, it's
because of
close.
The NFL. No,
so again, guys, sorry to jump in, but head over to facebook.com/pros2preps, like our page, share your input.
Yeah,
good stuff
can,
there.
And you can check out a lot more on the Facebook page and also at pros2preps.com. All sorts of good stuff, talking local sports here around the state. That's Greg Esposito. I'm Jared Cohen. We're filling in for Brad Sesmat today on the Brad Sesmat Show and pros2preps.com.